I can safely say that Leon Atkinson and I, and hello, Leon.
Hello, Vern. How
are
you?
In a great mood for a very particular reason. Let's jump right into that great reason.
Well, it's actually a little bit late starting this year, because usually you're here a little bit earlier in the year, in September, but we're, well, it's still September, technically. No?
October 1st.
October 1st. That's right. Okay.
No, you're right. It's a little later.
A little bit later. But Brad Richter is sitting across from me and Vern, and we're in a little studio, and it's always exciting because he and Victor Uzer always come and do a duo concert at the Jaclyn Arts and Cultural Center. And that's going to happen on tomorrow evening at 7 p.m. So make sure you make note of that and get there, because it's going to be an exciting time. First of all, welcome, Brad, back to the studio.
Thank you, Leon. And it's nice to get to be in the room with Vern. Usually we're in the other room.
I know, that's true.
And it's fun to be here all together.
So a little more intimate, which is nice. And this is probably the last time you're going to get to be in this studio, because we're moving to our new station. So you can make note of everything. And next time we have a green room and everything, and it'll be set up. It's going to be quite
I'm so excited
nice.
For you guys. Although this building has so much charm, and it's kind of...
In its own way.
It's kind of exactly what you imagine an NPR station should look like, in a way.
And the walls reek with vibes of
oh, a lot of years.
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of years, yeah. I mean, I sat here, and Elliot Fisk sat here, and I remember him saying to me, gee, I love you. You ask such great questions. You make me sound smart.
You do ask great questions.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And anyway, let's talk. Tell me what's been happening since I've seen you. It's been almost a year.
Yeah. Well, lead guitar. The
program.
I have a program called Lead Guitar. I know you know all about it because
we've worked together
on
with
it quite a bit. But the mission of Lead Guitar, it's a not-for-profit. We put free guitar programs in low-income public schools, and that's growing really nicely.
Nice.
And part of my task at the University of Arizona is now to work on lead guitar-type programs for other arts disciplines. So that's kind of fun, and I've always been, as you have been too, one who's really interested in cross-genre collaboration.
Oh, definitely. It's so important.
Yeah. So I'm enjoying all of that, and then the touring is going well, especially with Victor. We play quite a bit, and the family is good. It's all good.
And Brad has a young son. I believe he's 9?
Yes.
And who is a little guitar wizard. I mean, he was playing Leander for me last time I was there. That was 3 years ago.
Yeah, he's a good player. I try to stay out of the way. You know, it's hard. Yeah.
That's wonderful, wonderful. Well, you know, you're hearing Brad's voice, and we pulled up into the driveway at the same time, so I know you haven't had a lot of time to loosen up your fingers, but play something just so they can get an idea of your musical voice.
I'd love to. I'll play a piece I've been playing a little bit lately that I originally wrote as a competition piece for the Walnut Valley Festival, for the National Fingerpicking Championship.
Nice.
Just a piece that just has lots of sounds, lots of speed, lots of things for a competition. So it's got a lot of percussion sounds and kind of a hybrid tremolo sound, but kind of a fun one for guitarists.
Nice. Well, let's hear. Do you have a name for it?
Starry Night on the Beach.
Okay. Thank you. Very lovely. And I see all the different techniques that you involved in that composition. And to go from doing a tremolo to a burst, it's high-speed scale.
Those are tough transitions.
Yeah, it's something that you don't see happening that often. You kind of get into a mode if you're doing an arpeggio or you're doing a tremolo, which is another thing that your right hand has to be very still. Then suddenly you got to move into a flashy scale. Very nice. You pulled it off very well, by the way.
Thank you very much. I've played it long enough that it's kind of fun and enjoyable to play, even though it's a little fast for the first piece of the day. But it you know how that is. Once you played a piece for that long.
Oh, yeah. It's in the DNA.
It's kind of in the DNA. Well said, yeah.
So let's talk about your partner that's coming in to play with you tomorrow at tomorrow night at 7 o'clock at the Jacqueline Arts and Cultural. Victor Uzo, and I used to always say Uzo because of the Greek booze that I used to have when I was in Spain. But Victor Uzo is a phenomenal cellist. And can you go back in history, because I remember hearing the story when you guys originally met, it was a group that you guys had put together. I think it was four of you originally, or three of you?
More than that, I'd have to count, but we had... So Victor is the professor of cello at Weber State University, mm-hmm. and we met in 2005, and originally I was commissioned to write a large ensemble piece for the university, and it included cello, but also voice, soprano, voice, choir, percussion, and narrator, and... Victor and I just really hit it off, and he kind of became my co-captain in putting all of that together and had a lot to do creatively with the piece. And the original idea was we would tour that larger work as a group, and then I would maybe play a few solos, and Victor and I might play some duos. Mm-hmm. And then as I got to know Victor better and heard him play and we got to work together, we had a musical and a friendship bond that just kind of made us want to go off by ourselves and keep going. And one of the things I remember that really, I didn't realize what an amazing player he was until after we broke off on our own and started mm-hmm. playing duos and really heard what he could do. Because when we were playing in the larger ensemble, he would just play his part well help as needed. But he's the best musician I've ever played with.
Well, his cello playing, he's so at one with the instrument.
Yeah.
You know, that's the only way to put it. He's so at one with the instrument that no matter what he decides to do, I mean, the thought comes to his head, and his finger in the bow, it's right there. And I watch him, I can see it's like the concept comes in, and it's the transition is spontaneous.
And unlike most classical string players, he's also a really good improviser.
Yes.
And so I really love the challenge of having to keep up with him. And it's good for me, and we have a lot of fun together. And one of the special things about playing at the Jack is it's almost always our first concert of the season.
Right.
Which there's some pressure on that, even though it feels like a hometown crowd to us. And we always try to premiere new work.
Yeah. Yeah. What are you going to do new this year?
Well, those are really good. There's a good tie in there because we're actually going to do a redux of that piece called Navigating Lake Bonneville that I originally wrote for that larger ensemble.
Right, okay.
So we've taken our three favorite movements and condensed them into a duo.
Oh, nice.
And so it's going to be fun.
An audience that wasn't planned. I didn't ask him that so he could lead into this piece, but that he's going to play tomorrow night. But it works out wonderfully. And that's the beauty of the spontaneity of communicating with someone that's on the same wavelength. You know, and it works. It just works that way. The instrument, the guitar and the cello, play a lot in the same range. And so how do you and Victor stay out of each other's way?
Well, you're right. And I would say we're very close to exactly the same range. Mm-hmm. And cello's just a third lower, and mm-hmm. we essentially have the same high end. Mm-hmm. But I find the instruments are so contrasting because of the timbre.
Yeah.
Because the singing voice of the cello and the kind of percussive attack of the guitar. Yeah. I mean, as guitarists, we really like to imagine that we have a warm, lyrical, legato tone.
You don't?
But
sure you do.
Compared to everybody else, it's splatty and short and percussive.
Well, yeah, because for those people listening that might not be aware, with cello you have this bow. With horse hair is what I believe they still use on it,
mm-hmm.
And it's in contact with the string constantly, and it's coming across the string. Whereas with the guitar, to get that same effect, you have to finger in the left hand, strike in the right hand, and then move the line with making another combination of fingering, and make it so smooth that you don't hear the attack, you don't hear the release, and you don't hear the decay of the sound. So it's called cantabile in the singing way, and a lot of guitarists do have a hard time doing that well. You do it well.
Well, I work on that a lot, mm-hmm. But then, you know, when I'm sitting next to a great cellist, you can really hear the difference just in what the instruments do.
Yeah.
But that we love that, you know, and we ride around that, and we either just like music in general does, it caters to either expectation or surprise. So we'll either use those characteristics and ride around them, where I'm playing something percussive and more accompaniment-like, and he's playing a melody that's a little more connected. But sometimes we like to reverse those roles, and I play the melody, and he does percussive.
I didn't make the concert last year. I was trying to have two things happening at the same time. I'm going to see the first half of yours and the other half.
Oh, that's right. It was in Alex DeGrasse
right,
was here,
right.
too.
Right, and we had the Harp Festival going all over the place. So I didn't make it. But the year before, I believe it was the year before, you did the Rodrigo, and you played the melody of the middle section. And you guys went back and forth with it. As we're talking about cello and guitar, I think it's appropriate. You sent a couple of things to the station, and I'll let you decide which one you think would fit where we're at right now in terms of talking about the cello and the long sustain and that sonority, and the guitar and the long sustain without being quite as long. What piece would demonstrate that of the two?
Again, that's a really good lead-in, coincidentally, because the first piece is in two movements, and if it's okay, we might as well listen to them back-to-back,
because
they're kind of connected in that way. So first, the first one is the first case, expectation. It's the cello playing a long, warm melody with lots of sustain. And then the guitar is doing almost entirely percussive things and filling in blank spots. Mm-hmm. And then the next movement, called Circles, is the opposite. Victor is doing a lot of unusual percussive things on the cello, and I'm filling in more of the melodic material. The piece, also, it's kind of coincidentally appropriate because it's the first piece we ever played together.
Oh.
While I was writing that Bonneville piece, this is a piece I had written for David Finkel in 2003.
That's right.
And Victor and I kind of took up the mantle and began to play it in 2005. So we're coming back around to it for the first time for the concert tomorrow night.
We haven't
played it in a while.
Yeah,
it's kind of our 10-year anniversary.
Goodness, okay.
And well, the piece is, I read a book now 15 years ago by Peter Gold called Ancient Navajo and Tibetan Wisdom, The Circle of the Spirit. And it was a really fascinating look at the similarities between Tibetan and Navajo culture, and as it turns out, the genome is almost precisely the same.
Okay.
So it was kind of more evidence that this was the culture that almost remained intact as it went over, you know, from what's now Russia to Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Bering Strait, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then down into North America. So there are things like hundreds and hundreds of cognates between the two languages, Tibetan and Navajo. They're the only two cultures that do sand painting, you know, with letting hand run through the sand and making complex designs. And all of these connections, and these two movements are kind of a tribute to
that. So it's kind of like establishing proof that it's one and the same.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's listen to these two pieces.
Thank you.
performance of Fragments Transcending. Brad Richter wrote it, and the two movements are Facing East and Circles, played by Brad Richter and Victor Ouzer, and one of those people's in the studio, along with Leon Atkinson. And so back to you guys.
Thank you, thank you. And this is Leon, of course, and we're going to from Brad. Brad, you're playing, first of all, let me compliment you on that piece, and your playing and Victor's playing. You two play like one.
Thank you.
You really do. And I can just feel the pulse and the syncopation and back, and then you would nail it on the beat. That was just very, very solid playing. Very nice.
You know, I was saying as we were listening, I should give credit to Ed Lee Nate, who's the Navajo singer who originally wrote the theme that first movement was based on. And about the first 20 seconds of Victor's playing is really just Ed Lee Nate's writing.
Nice.
And then we kind of turn it into variations on that theme after that.
Very well done. Very nice. Okay, now you're playing an interesting instrument. You had it last time, too. And I noticed it when you came in because it was made by the same builder, but it was much warmer sounding. I liked it much more than the last one. The last one was fine, but this one is really exquisite. To use a Leon word.
Exquisite is a good word for this.
And so talk about it, the name of the builder. Well, no, don't talk about it yet. Play something that demonstrates how wonderful it is.
Okay.
And then we'll talk about it.
We were talking about lyrical quality on the guitar. I'll play a song that emphasizes that,
okay.
Called The Waters Beneath.
Good. Thank you. Very nice. I had to give it a chance to finish breathing the very end there. It was very, very lovely. And so now, that instrument that you're playing on, the Abilder, I believe, is from Germany.
Yeah, Trevor Semple, he's originally from England. I met him there when I was a student at the Royal College of Music. But you're right, he's in Germany now.
Right, because I know when I emailed him, it was Germany, yeah.
And I think he's been there about 10 years.
Okay.
He's a brilliant maker, and I've known him since I was a student at the college in 1994, and this
going back quite a
the
ways.
Third guitar of his that I've had.
Okay.
In fact, I got turned on to him originally because my teacher, Carlos Bonell, played one of his guitars, and I remember thinking it was the best guitar I've ever heard in my life. Mm-hmm. Carlos's playing had something to do with that, too, of course. But I got to know Trevor, and I'm a bit like you with this experience. Not only is it important that it's a great guitar, an exquisite guitar, mm-hmm. but I really love the experience of getting to know the guitar maker and talking
yes.
about the process. And Trevor is a dear friend, that gives it special meaning when it's in your hands.
Totally. It gives it a spirituality, if I can use such a word. Some people might disagree with that word for it, but I feel it's a spirituality.
I do too.
That is a connection between you and the builder. I mean, Eric Saleen, who built the guitar that I play most of the time, the Hauser copy that I have. I've known Eric since '79. And we've traveled across country together. When I had my transplant and came out of the hospital, or even before that, when I was going into the hospital with short notice, I called him at 6 a.m. in the morning and woke him up to come down and pick up my guitars. I had brought three guitars to the hospital, and I had to leave them there for him to come and rescue them, and he did. And then when I left the hospital, I went and stayed at his house for a week. So there's that connection, and you're talking about the connection with your builder, and then with my Velasquez, which I'm really connected to was connected to Manuel Velasquez from when I was 10 years old. And I have a 59 Velasquez, which you probably don't know about. That's a new instrument for me. Not new, I've had it a couple of years now, that I've ran across and had to have. Again, didn't know how I was going to get it, but I got it. And because I met Velasquez in 56, and I was 10 years old, and I had... I was studying with Albert Valdez Blaine, and he came in with a light bulb and a wire to examine Albert's 39 Hauser Senior. And then he came in several times, and I was, of course, a little curious kid, right up under him, and he's pushing me back. No, back. And then he brought Albert the first copy, which was a 57 Velasquez. Wonderful guitar. And I now own a 58. So that connection is really important.
It is.
Really important. So this builder, and I'm going to get one of his guitars because I like these guitars. We've talked a little bit, and if you are listening, at some point, this financial is holding me up, but it's going to happen because I do want one of your instruments. Wonderful guitar.
Yeah, they are. And Trevor also has, I think he finished his PhD. I know he was most of the way through a PhD in nanotechnology.
Oh, my gosh.
And some of those ideas find their way into the guitar in interesting ways. I mean, not directly, but we may have talked about this last year, but the neck actually detaches.
Yes.
But more importantly, you can use this Allen wrench on the back to adjust the action. And that can be really handy
When you're traveling. Oh my god, yeah, because that the weather changes do havoc.
Can I tell you a stupid anecdote about the Trevor and I are both James Bond fans, and I don't remember actually anymore because it's been so long since I talked to him about it, if this was really the original idea,
okay,
that this letter Q is sort of a nod at Q, the guy from James Bond films. Who built.
Yes.
So that may not be true, mm-hmm. but that idea got in my head. And I would sometimes, when I'm talking to groups of kids, mm-hmm. I'll tell them that just, you know, as something to connect with. So I was teaching in Aspen as part of the festival there, and I was teaching someone. I can't mention the name of this rock band because then if that person is listening, he'll know I'm talking about his daughter.
Right.
But anyway, I had one of those experiences where I was trying to teach the kid something, and she said, "Well, my dad plays the guitar, and he says you know, whatever the opposite of what I said was. And you know, you always want to say, oh, but I know better. But what I always say is, oh, I'm sure your dad is fantastic. But try this. And she was kind of unwilling to try what I was asking her to try. And of course, I asked her what band, you know, she said, my dad's in a band, and she said the name of the band, and it's a very famous band, but I'm not very hip, and I didn't know that. I didn't recognize the name. And then, but anybody else would have. And then the next day in class, she was in the class, and I was telling my silly little story about the Q and how I'm a big James Bond fan. And I asked, does anybody else like James Bond movies? And she raised her hand and she said, oh, I like James Bond movies. And she said, I said, well, what's your favorite movie? And I can't say the name of the movie, but she said what her favorite movie was. And in my mind, I was thinking, that's like the worst James Bond movie. So I was like, why do you like that one? And she said, oh, well, my dad wrote all the music for it.
Oh.
And I was like, oh, okay. So he probably does know how to play the guitar.
Yeah, I would say probably so.
Yeah.
Probably so. Okay, and the move. Well, I don't want to leave the Aspen thing, because the person who helps to coordinate and the program when you go to Aspen, the lady, because she was in that ensemble that I taught.
Yeah, that was Deborah Barnicot.
Deborah, right? Is she still involved?
She retired.
Oh, she did.
And Katie Hone Wilchin, who's taken up her role, is also doing fantastic
good,
work.
Good. Okay. I'm looking at the time, so I better stop talking. We need to have some more music.
Sorry, I went on a bit.
No, we both did. So do you want to do... No, we want to do that last, so you can get going for your next thing.
I'm fine.
How about Ironwood?
That sounds good to me, too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
So this is a piece that Victor and I wrote together. The Ironwood, it's a tree, a cousin of the mesquite tree that lives in the Sonoran Desert, but the name was an afterthought. We just you'll hear that the piece is kind of a mix of heavy metal ideas and classical ideas, and Ironwood seemed like a good fit. Thank you.
Once again, we're hearing the Richter Ouser duo, this piece, Ironwood. And before I throw it back to them, I want to thank Jim Tevenin for processing this recording that you brought in, Brad. Tell us about the performance that we just heard.
So we had a really fun run. We were playing on a series for UA Presents, which is the University of Arizona's concert presenter. And they had us in a nightclub three nights in a row. So we're gonna have a live CD of that recording, because of course we're able to pick our favorite take from each of the three nights. And it was really fun to get settled in and play in the same spot three nights in a row. And it was about 110-120 seats in a relatively little room with club lights and quite amplified. But you can't really hear that in the recording because it's so close mic'd. It gave us a lot of post-production control. But it was three really fun nights and good to get to do it in my hometown.
Nice. Very, very nice. Okay, let's talk about the hometown of Post Falls. Tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, you and Victor Ouso, you meaning Brad Richter and Victor Ouso, Ouser. It slipped in.
You're thinking about a drink.
Yeah, it slipped in. I was conscious about not doing it, but it slipped in. Are performing tomorrow night at the Jacqueline Austin Cultural Center. Let's talk about that a bit, Brad. You, tell me about it.
Well, I apologize if I've already said this, because I think about it quite a bit. This is playing at the Jack. It was before it was called the Jack. It was called the Old Church then. But I think it was the first full concert we'd ever played as a duo, and we've played there every year since. And it really feels like our most home audience. We try all our new material filters through that venue first. The audience gives us a lot of patience and love, in the sense that they're ready to experiment with us in a fun way. And I also feel like we do, even though it's the first concert of the year, we do some of our best playing every year there because of the audience. There's an electric feeling.
Yes.
Our adrenaline is through the roof because of the new stuff and getting back together, and it's all fresh, and it's a lot of fun.
And the lovely resonant room.
Oh, my God. The acoustic in there is unbeatable.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. It's very alive. Beautiful. 7 o'clock tomorrow night at the Jacqueline Arts and Cultural Center. I would say, if you don't have your tickets, you probably should get them so that they don't sell out on you. I would get busy right after the show. Call the Jacqueline Austin. Do you know the number there, by any chance?
I'll find it by the end of the show.
Okay. And so you can call in and reserve your tickets. Get them in. We'll call immediately. Brad, this is always a treat.
For me, too. I look forward to this for 364 days.
Oh, thank
starting
you,
tomorrow.
Thank you. That's really nice to hear. And we do as well. And as I've said before, when I've had you on the show, Brad and I go back before the show, and I won't go into all of that because we don't have time to do it now, but because I want you to play one more short thing if you have something that you want to do.
Sure.
You have about 4 minutes.
Anything in particular? Something in the repertoire, something I wrote, something fast, slow,
something, happy, something, you pick it, but 4 minutes to dazzle everybody so they'll be there tomorrow.
That's a lot of pressure. dazzling makes me think I'll play Elation, which is fast and happy. And
okay,
fun.
Good.
It's 2.5 minutes, so I'll take just a second to tune. This is, I know we have a lot of guitarists that listen to the show.
Dadgad.
So this is, I'm dropping both E strings, the high and the low, to D.
Mm-hmm.
The piece is in D major, so I've got a lot of... It's not easy to modulate once you do that. All right, this is Elation. thanks.
Wonderful. And it did dazzle. That was Brad Richter, who is performing tomorrow night with Victor Uzer at the Jacqueline Austin Cultural Center at 7 o'clock.
Yeah, I'll give the contact information. Phone number, which is hard to get over the phone, over the air, but I'll say it a couple times, is 208-457-8950. In Idaho, it's 457-8950. Easier for most people is simply the JacquelineCenter.org, and all you really need to know is that Jacqueline is spelled J-A-C-K-L-I-N, the JacquelineCenter.org. So that's the contact information on that.
And thank you so much, Brad.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I love getting to do this. Thank you.
There's another Guitar Hour. Thanks to both of you. We'll keep doing enjoyable Guitar Hours over the next next 20 years at least. I was thinking about that. I was thinking about you, Leon, and I was doing the rough math in my head, and I have you having driven about 120,000 miles for the Guitar Hour and you're in the course of it. So that was my ballpark math on that one. Okay.